hard for the covers to be pulled from their slumbers, but a ghost never gives up.
Josh Ritter has arrived. After years playing open mics in Boston, then establishing a name in Ireland, Ritter has finally found his niche in America. The folk rocker has sometimes been dubbed the heir apparent to Bob Dylan and Bruce Springsteen, and Joan Baez has recorded a version of his song Wings. Ritter's latest album is called The Historical Conquests of Josh Ritter. He stopped by the TT Book Studios to talk with Steve Paulson and play a couple of songs like this one, Temptation of Adam.
If this was the Cold War, we could keep each other warm. I said on the first occasion that I met Marie, we were crawling through the hatch that was the missile silo door, and I don't think that she really thought that much of me. I never had to learn to love her like I learned to love the bomb. She just came along and started to ignore me. But as we waited for the big one, I started singing her my songs. I think she started feeling something for me. We passed the time with crosswords that she thought to bring inside. What five letters spell apocalypse, she asked me.
I was sitting in my basement. I had just bought a house in my hometown in Moscow, Idaho. And I was sitting in my basement. I had moved a desk down there. And I think the subterranean sort of feel of it made me think about being in a missile silo. I write a bunch of different ways, and I try and be open to writing and ideas wherever they come from. And sometimes they just kind of spring into your head, kind of fully formed. And the idea of falling in love in a missile silo with a girl and trying to keep your mind on, you know, the fate of the world while kind of falling in love with this girl sitting next to you in a jumpsuit was the puzzle, you know, and I thought like that'd be fun. But I was really thinking about like that, you know.
Do you really have to think about the end of the world? I mean, do you sort of have to get into that mindset? Well, or is it more thinking about love?
I was more thinking about love, you know. The end of the world part was for the comedy. But I thought, like, you know, like, really, you can have the story of the Garden of Eden without having to have God involved, you know. It's about, you know, that first flush of love when everything seems perfect and before you really know everything about each other. And that's the moment where it's kind of like, you know, after that, it's as you learn and as the knowledge comes along, you know, things get more complicated. And maybe that Garden of Eden existence is kind of lost to you in some ways. In other ways, I think it continues, but I like the idea of love in the most controlled environment, you know, like a kind of hothouse flower or an aquarium or a missile silo, you know.
Oh, Marie, if you would stay, then we could stick pins in the map of all the places where you thought that love would be found. But I would only need one pin to show where my love's at, in a top secret location 300 feet under the ground. Oh, we could hold each other close. We'd stay up every night looking up into the dark like it's the night sky. Pretend this giant missile is an old oak tree instead, and we'd carve our name in hearts into the warhead. Well, Marie, there's something tells me things just won't work out above, that our love would live a half-life on the surface. So at night while you are sleeping, I hold you closer just because, as our time grows short, I get a little nervous. So I think about the big one, WWIII. Would we ever really care if the world had ended? And you could hold me here forever like you're holding me tonight. I think about that great big button and I'm tempted.
Now, is this new album a departure for you? I mean, were you just doing something new here?
I think, yeah. I kind of want every album to be... Every album has to have its own language, musically and lyrically. It has to... And I never know what that is, except that I base mostly what I... You know, I learn things from recording each album, each subsequent album. I try and take lessons I learned and kind of turn them on their head and go in a different direction because... it keeps it interesting for me, you know.
So what did you do differently this time?
Well, I wrote, my last record, Animal Years, was about kind of religion and the war in America and how we talked about it. That was, for me, it was like a big, huge topic, and it was kind of political, but also very like, you know, it was a very heady mix of stuff, and I just didn't want to do that this time. I wanted there to be a lot of humor. I wanted every song to have something funny in it, as much as I could, you know. You know, I didn't want to talk about big subjects. I wanted to kind of let, if there were big subjects around, which there were, you know, the war, for instance, I wanted them to come in on a very, very oblique way. So that was one thing. I also wanted to write on piano. I wanted to get away from guitar, and I just wanted to kind of pound on piano, which I really can only play in C and A minor. It's like I can only play the white keys, you know. And so I would just pound in a way like, you know, I guess like Frankenstein's monster, you know, just all 10 fingers on the keyboard and very slowly. All of a sudden now you're back again. I thought you were happy with whoever. Did you dream about me now?
So you were actually doing the music first before you wrote that?
A lot of times the music and the lyrical ideas kind of come separately, and I think it's kind of like you're finding the frame of a crossword puzzle, the musical frame, and then you fill it in. You know, sometimes you get lucky and you find the right clue, you know. You know, a certain idea won't fit with a certain type of music, and you just have to hold them in your head or in your little book for years sometimes before they all kind of fit together, and when they do, it's just completely magical, you know. But I think mostly it's about like waiting around, you know. And I had to wait around to find the right language for this record, and it's very much like, well, I was listening to a lot of Buddy Holly, like early Buddy Holly, like apartment tapes that he did where it's just him on his own, and then lots of like Paul McCartney, the Ram record, which is great, and then a lot of rap.
So it sounds like you're intrigued by the circumstances in which music is made. I mean, it's obviously you got to like the music.
Definitely.
But it's sort of where that music comes out of, too.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. My parents are both scientists, and I thought I was going to be a scientist, a neuroscience, and I thought that was it for me. But what I found as I studied was that I was way more interested in the scientists themselves, you know. Mm-hmm. I was way more interested in somebody like Newton and what the time he was living in and how he went about doing the things he did and these amazing things and dangerous things, how he lived through some of his own experiments. And I was way more interested in that necessarily than the results of the process, you know, which is weird.
Yeah. I thought I heard you pulling up outside. Just the wind whistling through the pines. I haven't seen the one I'm looking for. Just empty shadows in my open door.
Well, I'm so struck by how you harken back to some of these great musicians from the 50s and 60s, Paul McCartney, Buddy Holly, and I mean, you can hear a bit of Dylan in your music, of Springsteen, and you know, you've said you're 31 years old. Mm. I find it fascinating, right? And I'm intrigued by how someone of your age goes back to music back then. I mean, sort of whether you feel like, I mean, is it just appreciating the music then, or is there, do you have to kind of jump across generations and think about the different world that they were living in?
Well, I think music of any kind that's made with some honesty, you can recognize it. You know, you can, I think, honesty, I don't know what exactly honesty is, but I can tell when somebody, you know, when somebody saw that, you know, fish swimming by and reached in and grabbed it, you know, you can tell. You know, you can tell when they latched onto something. And I think I appreciate that. I mean, there are people like, you know, Leonard Cohen or, you know, of course, Dylan, Tom Waits. There are these artists, but there are also people like Alfred Deller, who is an amazing countertenor, or Marian Anderson, or people like, you know, Sonny Terry. Or, you know, there's these people that, you know, it could be anything, and you would recognize it when you heard it as something that was special and apart from everything.
Well, let me ask you about Dylan, because that's maybe the musician who most often pops up when people talk about your influences, and certainly some of your songs, I'm thinking of To the Dogs or Whoever, where there's just this flurry of words, they just kind of come pouring out, which is rather Dylan-esque.
Totally,
How do you think about his music? But what makes him special?
Well, I mean, Dylan is like, you know, you have to think about Dylan a lot of different ways, especially writing. Anybody who's a songwriter is I don't think it's especially special to be compared to Dylan. Everybody is, you know, everybody with a guitar. I take it as a huge compliment. You have to remember that Dylan is like a historical figure. You know, he comes from a historical, the set of circumstances that created him and that he created are impossible to unravel. And, you know, in terms of anybody being a new Dylan, it's an impossibility because Dylan was Dylan.
Some people of your age are resentful of that time. It's like, can people just shut up about the 60s?
Well, I think, you know, that there's three things that never really change in art and in writing. If you take apart any song, it's about war or love or God. And those things have never changed. And in different degrees, it's all about, for me, finding, writing about those things. And the themes never change. And people, I don't really believe people change. So I think it's about, you know, I love a lot of music from that period. I love a lot of writing from that period. It's an incredible period. But this is my time. And I'm writing about what I see around me. And of course, I use some of these templates that I grew up with, you know, some of the people like Dylan or Springsteen or, you know, and I use them because they make sense to me, and I have a guitar and I can play it on my own. But, and I look up to them in some ways for what they've done, you know, but they're all my songs, which is what I'm really proud of. And none of them, they didn't write any of them.
Deep in the belly of a whale, I found her down with the deep blue jail around her, running her hands through the ribs of the dark.
Do you see yourself more as a folk singer, more as a rock and roller, or do those distinctions even matter to you?
Every time I get in a cab and we start talking about music, I usually end up lying, saying I play like post-punk Mexican border music or something like that. I always try and change, but I usually just say that it's rock and roll with lots of words. That's what I.
The
I'm
best
working
of both
on defining
worlds,
my own genre. Yeah.
You have emerged just recently. I mean, you are, you know, you're big. And I'm wondering if that must be fun, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
I've never lived the life of a rock and roll star, so yeah. I don't know what that's like. I mean, do you have a posse? Is it sort of hard to figure out how to keep your head?
It's fun. I will say, like, over the last, you know, it's way different than I thought it would be, you know. I started playing open mics when I was 22 in the Boston area. I moved out from Idaho to Ohio and then to Boston. And then it's kind of, so I've been touring for a long time, and only now have I noticed that there's certain things that get easier and they allow you to work harder on the things that make you do what you do if you can not be distracted by all the other things that come along. The other thing I've noticed is that people tell you where to go a lot more, you know?
Really? Like, I would think you'd be now telling them where to go.
No, I thought that would be the case, but unfortunately not. And the other thing I noticed is that there's a lot more sandwiches involved in my day than I'm comfortable with. When I go home, I'm just going to have like a sandwich-free month, you know.
So that what that really means is then when you're off tour, when you go home, I guess that must mean that much more. I mean, when you have your own space.
But... Oh yeah, it's shaky for a couple of days there without the tour manager, but it's great. You know, really, like, the best thing in the world, the thing that I find the best about being home after being on a tour for a long period is that I get up in the morning and make coffee in my own kitchen. And I also found that I love washing dishes. You know, my cooking is getting a little better, but not much better. And I really just like washing dishes. I don't know what it is, but I can't figure that out. It's Freudian.
Once I knew a girl in the hard, hard times. She made me a shirt out of fives and dimes. Now she's gone, but when I wear it, she crosses my mind. And if the best is for the best, then the best is unkind. I realized that Illinois.
Steve Paulson spoke with folk rocker Josh Ritter in the studios of Wisconsin Public Radio in Madison. Ritter's latest album is called The Historical Conquests of Josh Ritter.